I never thought this day would come.
Lisa, we've made it. It's over.
And we are live.
Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works. You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
I like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
We're never going to get through if we keep going this slow through this episode.
Insert music here. Welcome to Mike TV. This is episode 3 of Mike TV, in which we will be covering Game of Thrones Season 8, Episodes 5 and 6, the final two episodes of the series.
Woo!
Please follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1 and let us know what shows you'd like us to cover next. Spoiler alert, we are going to cover FX's Legion, which starts its third and final season next month. So more to come on that. Joining me today is my fabulous co-host, Autumn Fisher. Welcome, Autumn.
Hello.
How did you like the finale and episode leading into it?
Okay, well, the finale, when it ended, I was like, okay. Okay. I don't want to get too much into it because we'll get into it on the show. But and then right. the previous one was just so stressful.
Very much so.
Stress. I had like a stomach ache during it. I was enjoying it, but I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that kind of feeling. And then the end of this, the series finale felt just like, okay. Okay. You know, like, yeah, just what's that actor's name? With you looking at me? That guy. What's his name? Oh my God. Why?
Pacino.
No, that's no. Al Pacino's like, you got a great ass. That guy. No. Yeah, Taxi Driver. Everybody knows who I'm talking about.
Yes.
You think about him saying, okay. Like, okay. That's how I felt.
Right.
That was okay. A long way to go for me not to remember his stupid name. I'm sorry. Cut that out.
No, it's okay. I know who you're talking about, and it's killing me that I can't remember his name either. I think episode 5, which was the penultimate episode, was very divisive. There was this fan outcry, you know, almost immediately to, you know, redo the entire season. And, you know, and I feel the same way. I wasn't mad at it. I didn't have the same reaction that so many fans had, apparently. I feel like they did a good job foreshadowing Dany's descent into madness. It was horrible to watch, but it was very well executed as far as, you know, the cinematography and the special.
Oh my God. That was
incredible. Yes.
Amazing.
It did feel a bit fan servicey at times with the Clegane Bowl, but underwhelmingly fan servicey at times with, say, for instance, the way Cersei died. So we'll get into that, of course. I will say, as an overall, now that we've seen it, now that it's ended, it did feel rushed. Going all the way back to season 7, you know, it felt rushed. I feel like we've been cheated a total of 7 episodes that we certainly could have welcomed and probably would have enhanced the story greatly if they had stuck to the 10 episodes for season 7 and then 10 episodes for season 8. So we only had 7 in 7 and 6 in 8. Hmm. So that's where I'm coming up with. We were 3 short in season 7 and 4 short in season 8. And so I don't know where that cry to rush it came from. If it was the creators, if it was the actors and actresses were ready to move on. I don't know, but it just felt rushed.
Yeah, maybe it had something to do with the budget. I mean, when you look into those, like on HBO, I think on the HBO YouTube page, you can look at it's called like bloopers or like behind the game or something.
Sure, yeah, I've watched them.
Yeah, they're that episode 5 was intense just to watch.
Yeah.
Intense to make.
They built a whole city just to destroy.
Yes. And then, you know, one of the writers comment said that, you know, I write 5 words on a page and it turns into, you know, 7 months worth of work for someone.
And I am for sure going to watch that special that they're airing next week. As we record this, it's the next day after the final episode is aired, but HBO still has one more zinger they're going to give us, and that's this making of the final season documentary, which will be airing a week from the final episode airing. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. So after episode 5, and the reason we didn't do, there were scheduling conflicts on my end, so apologies to all of our 5 fans as we're a baby podcast, but also all of the fans that I know are listening for Autumn, apologies that we missed last week. I didn't want to form my opinion. I decided also, in addition to scheduling conflict, I didn't want to form my opinion on episode 5 until I saw episode 6 and until I saw how they were going to wrap it up. And the fact that I feel like they did wrap it up in a successful way makes me appreciate episode 5 more now. So Okay. We will start with our highlights of episode 5 and then get through those rather quickly and then move into episode 6.
Okay.
So here we go. Game of Thrones, Season 8, Episode 5, The Bells, written by Benioff and Weiss, directed by Miguel Sapochnik. Of course, Miguel Sapochnik directed Episode 3, The Long Night. He directed Hard Home. He directed Battle of the Bastards. He's our battle guy.
Yeah.
One thing that I really feel like they did that was so cool, and if you blink, you miss it, was the previously on. When they ran the previously on, dear listeners, I'm asking you to think back to 2 weeks ago, they ran a previously on at the start of episode 5, which ended, the previously on ended with Missandei being beheaded and Dany turning around and kind of storming off and her face showing just this, you know, descent from grief to anger. In the previously on, however, they showed that same scene, but they aired all this voiceover, like presumably of all these voices going on through her head. Mm. And I really wish in the context of the show they had done that, although maybe they really don't do inner monologue. I get it on the show. But it was so cool. There was, going through her head, there was the discussion on, you know, he has the better claim to the throne. And then there was a Cersei, quote, you know, right. The gods flip, when a Targaryen is born, the gods flip a coin.
Right.
And then there's Olenna Tyrell saying, be a dragon. Yeah. And Tyrion saying children are not like their parents. And then, of course, it ends with Viserys, her brother, saying, don't want to wake the dragon.
Right.
So I think that really showed what was going on in her head, all of this conflict. Anyway, I really appreciated it.
And she was always, I mean, a badass forever. She's always been... I mean, she killed the
Tarleys.
Yeah, the Tarleys like that. I think we all had an inkling that she was going to like freak out, like those bells weren't going to do anything for her. I think we all had that feeling. But then when she actually did it and they kept showing all those kids in the town because they wanted to tell us like, look, this is not just affecting, quote, bad guys who are turning into good guys because they're being oppressed by this dragon fire. That she has been, she's been so like
impulsive,
interested in helping. Well, no, she's been interested in helping the underdog, and she saw the people as underdogs. But then, when I guess the combination of Cersei using them against her, and you know, sort of like daring her not to come after her because all of these innocent people will die. She was like, and then killing her friend and then her child dragon. You know what I mean?
I
get it, but I think that that's what you mean when it's rushed, because we didn't have enough time to start really seeing her turn into a sort of tyrant instead of just someone who's, you know, going through something.
Well, you said it before that this season has kind of suffered due to lack of dialogue between the characters, if they just had a little bit of conversation with one another. Like, I heard a great fan theory. If while they, before any of them even left the North, if they had just said, hey, we've got this assassin over here who can wear many faces.
Yeah.
Why don't we just have her put on another face? We know a secret way into King's Landing through Tyrion. The tunnels. Why don't we just send her in there, kill Cersei, and it's over. And it all, you know, it just would have been done. And they all could have, you know, kept eating bonbons and relaxing up North.
Yeah, they would have had to deal with Euron, I guess. And anybody else who's and anybody else who's sort of backing maybe right. The army, the Lannister, I don't know, but still Tyrion had the secret way in. And they have Bran, like Bran could have warged into the crows and taken a look and say, "Whoa, Cersei, look out, they got these things on the ships now and they're going to get you." You know,
right.
There were so, and I feel like that's what is happening in this season, and in previous seasons, this show was one I could count on that I didn't have questions like that. Like, why doesn't so-and-so just say this to, like, that wasn't happening. It was like all explained. Everything seemingly made sense.
So when you think about the impulsive things that Dany has done over the seasons, and just to name a few, she locked Zorozon Zoxus and Doria, her handmaiden, in that vault when she found out they betrayed her back in Marine or whatever. I mean, so she just, you know, locked them in a vault to slowly starve and suffocate to death. That's pretty horrific.
But they were kind of evil.
They betrayed her, right. Yeah. But she, of course, burned slave masters after, you know, as a retaliation after those ones have been crucified. She did that. My reign is just begun, you know, burned them and on those boats at the end of season 6.
She also was pretty impulsive to hire that gypsy to bring Khal Drogo back.
And then, yes, like the Tarleys, even with counsel of put them in the cells, they're from a great house, consider sending them to the Black, take the Black. All kinds of options were presented before her. But so I feel like her counsel saw this coming and should have also been a little more aware of this.
But those were her. Well, I think that Tyrion was worried that the Bells weren't going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, I guess. I'm just putting that on him. But also, I mean, she, when we're at least in the context of her ideas, she is seeing them as enemies. And so then we see, and we kind of understand, even though like, okay, yeah, she could treat them differently because they're a lord or there's other ways to do it. At least, like if she, okay, instead of burning the whole goddamn city down, if she, you know, busts into the keep with her dragon and destroyed it and like fired Cersei to death or whatever, at least we would understand because it's like, that's right. The enemy. The citizens were not the enemy. And so that's why we didn't get any sort of warning that she would do that to innocent people because we've been told the entire series that she is helping the innocent people.
Right. She didn't need to zigzag through the city.
And that's fine if she did. But if we had gotten more sort of pieces of that as we went along, I think there wouldn't be as much like nerd fan outrage.
Well, and then I mentioned, you know, wanting to see episode 6 to completely, assess my opinion of episode 5. It was the conversation that Dany had with John, where she blamed the fact that she had to kill all of those innocent people on Cersei and almost on them also because of the fact that Cersei was using them as a shield even after they'd been offered peace and that they, I guess, willingly were standing there as shields. And so they deserved it.
They didn't know they were being shields.
No, but she thought
that they were being protected.
She had this lunatic way of justifying it. So I felt like that was really interesting. Good writing.
I think that that's fine for her to do that. But for us, well, yeah, if it was real, I guess it's not fine. But I get it. I get that thinking. You know, that's, and I think that, you know, on paper they can say that this is why and there's the evidence or whatever. But I think for us as viewers, we didn't get enough. We didn't get to see her do that enough for this to make sense, for her to start going after the innocent people of, you know, Kingsland.
Agree. Seven more episodes would have gotten us there, no doubt.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Showrunners were probably trying to, catch us off guard. Not let, you know, we weren't supposed to see it coming. That's part of their thing that they like to do. So
no,
anyway,
no, decisions that people make, we're supposed to sort of see coming. Like Joffrey was impulsive by killing Ned Stark in the mm-hmm. beginning.
Right.
That was something we didn't see coming. But it made sense for his character. And so far with Daenerys, she has been all about the innocent people. And for her to turn against the innocent people we didn't get enough of her turning against the innocent people for it to make sense that she would burn King's Landing down. So
agree. All right. So
I'm not going to write any letters or start a Twitter campaign or anything.
No, but I do agree with that. So this episode starts off. Varys is writing scrolls, presumably more than one. And
there's a pile of them.
Yeah. So you see what is written on one scroll. He says, hidden by Eddard Stark, the true heir to the Iron Throne. Those are some of the words you can see on the scroll. He's also having a conversation with a little serving girl, and it's very clear that he's
Martha?
Trying to poison Daenerys, Martha, yeah. Right?
She gets a name in the show.
That's true. Hey, listen, they have to have another one, right? Yep.
Hey, Martha.
Some people were confused. I thought it was very clear he was trying to poison Daenerys.
Yeah.
So, then. Of course, John arrives and he blatantly just goes right out to John and says, you know, you should be the king. So obviously word got back to Daenerys pretty quickly. And so, without haste, Varys is burned.
Yeah. So he took off his rings at that mm-hmm. moment. And I thought that that was going to come back in some way, and it sure didn't. Why did they like zoom in on that?
So we're going to get there at the end, because this whole scrolls thing annoyed me, because then the scrolls just went nowhere. I mean, I've got a whole thing about a whole rant that I'm probably going to save till the end about the fact that I'm just going to start it now, that Jon was a secret Targaryen and none of that meant anything at the end.
Yeah.
Yes. So we'll get there, but yeah, I don't know what the rings being taken off. I don't know.
That was such a big deal and such a fun thing to find out. And then,
again, terrible way.
A little love trouble, like a little argument between two couples. But
I kept thinking, why are Jon and Tyrion just standing there letting it happen? I was fuming at that point. Now, it was a really cool scene. It was neat seeing Drogon come up behind her out of the dark. The actor who plays Varys did amazing, as always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so then we get a shot of Dany by the fire. Grey Worm comes in and gets, you know, she gives him Missandei's only possession.
Her possession. Even though she had lots of clothes, I guess she had that. But yeah, and she gives it to him. It's her like chain. And he just throws it in the fire. And I thought, hey, maybe she would have wanted to keep that if you're just going to throw it in the fire.
I know. I think it just really shows just how detached both those characters are.
I guess.
Or were. Then John comes in, and that's a nice scene between John and Daenerys also.
I forget what happens there. What was that?
Now I'm trying to remember what happens there too. I think we have to cut this out.
They said,
she tries once again to essentially have sex with him. Or,
oh, right. You know, like, yeah.
And he shuns her.
What did I say would happen if you told your sister?
I don't want it. And that's what I told him.
She betrayed your trust. She killed Varys as much as I did. This is a victory for her. Now she knows what happens when people hear the truth about you. Far more people in Westeros love you than love me. I don't have love here. I only have fear.
I love you. And you will always be my queen.
Is that all I am to you? Your queen.
And again, I kept waiting for him to say, but you're my aunt. You know, because she kept saying, I wish you'd never told me. I wish this wasn't a problem. You see, right. you see what happens. You know, I've been betrayed. This is only going to continue. This is because you told your sisters, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I don't want her. I don't want her.
I know. He really was a big old puss until the very end, huh? Anyway.
He has trouble between, like, love and duty, and the duty is
honor.
Honor.
Then another thing that
she's
was
like Thea then, or whatever.
Then the next scene that we learn, Tyrion learns that Jaime very stupidly was riding south and was captured by Daenerys' army. I guess he ran right into them.
Right. Because he
couldn't take the long way around or anything. No.
But so he finds that out because he's telling on Varys. Isn't that where he tells on Varys? And then he's leaving.
Yes.
And then she's like, oh, BT Dubs, we found your brother. Mm-hmm. And so he goes and
he goes and dismisses the guards, which was also dumb that they were so like stupid to be like, oh sure, this is his brother and he's telling us all the guards are dismissed. Doesn't raise any red flags at all.
I guess it's just following, you know, the rank of command. What is that phrase?
Sure.
Chain of command.
Yes. He pulled rank.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful goodbye scene between Tyrion and Jaime. I will say that was very nice to see. I'm glad we got it. It didn't make sense. It didn't even make sense that Davos would help him.
Yeah. Davos should have been like, if we're going to go the back way, we should send Arya. Hello. Or like, I'll go the back way and kill Cersei.
Right. It's just, yes. It just, no, but Davos was, he said to Davos, I need your help smuggling something. And yeah, it was implied that that was the boat that he was arranging for Jaime and Cersei to escape in.
I know, but he knows about that secret back way because he took Tyrion that way some other time. Remember?
Oh, when
he was like selling cockles and the oysters or whatever. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. This is why this is there's a little bit of disappointment is because there's so many like, why didn't we do that? Or why did they do that?
And what we've seen of Daenerys is that if she knows someone's about to betray her, she doesn't just imprison them. She burns them. So why would she be like, we have your brother. He's in prison. She would have just been like, screw this guy.
Yeah. You're going to support the queen.
Yeah. And plus, Jamie couldn't have even lied a little better and been like, oh, I'm here to help. He couldn't have made up anything.
That's a good point. And then like betrayed them somehow.
Very dumb. So this was truly something they had to do to further the goodbyes between the characters. It had nothing. It didn't make sense in the plot. Anyway.
That's annoying. Why did they do that? The show, I thought, had principle.
Yeah.
It doesn't in the end. It didn't. This last season, it didn't. It's almost like, it's not like George Lucas, because George Lucas focused on the technology for episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars. Like, he only cared about the technology and like sitting down while he was directing. But this, it was almost like the scenery and the environment and everything else were the focus.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they did an excellent job, unlike Lucas in 1, 2, and 3, they did an excellent job. Everything looked beautiful. I believed that they were really in places, but
yeah,
the
yeah.
issues with the writing.
And see, to me, that is very much like Lucas, because what was so shitty about those first three Star Wars movies, mm-hmm. you know, or the Star Wars 2000 movies.
Right. 1, 2, 3.
Were the fact that Anakin went to the dark side in like 15 minutes. So
well, listen, this is the same thing here.
Yes, Daenerys went to the dark side in like 15
minutes. Talking about winter is coming since the very second we started watching the show, winter came and it was done in a day.
Right.
Winter's
well,
done.
Winter came slowly until they were close enough to Winterfell, and then all of a sudden they ran very fast.
they dealt with it so quickly. And then, like you said, there's been this thing that's been going on. Like Ned was going to tell John, you know, who his mom is when he got back, but it never came back. And then that's just, you know, it's all right. We know now, and it's done.
But John was the rightful heir to the throne. Varys told all the people in the kingdom, and then at the very end, when they're holding council, trying to elect—spoiler alert—and they're trying to elect a king, it doesn't even come up in conversation. Like, well, hold on now, what about John?
It doesn't even come up.
So annoyed.
Oh my God. Frustrating.
So, speaking of the other frustrating plot elements, let's get these two off the table, bringing it back to episode 5.
Okay.
So the Golden Company, led by Harry Strickland, that went nowhere also. Danny took great care of them. So we see the scenes, the battles are aligned. Our northern men, our Dothraki, our Unsullied, they're all outside of the gates waiting for Danny's arrival. She comes in, you know, busts down the wall with Dragonfire, takes care of the Golden Company, no problem. There's a horrible CG moment. It's the worst CG maybe of the whole show, of Harry Strickland running with the you know, horses behind him, and Grey Worm kills him.
Yeah.
And that character, already people forgot him, but he did have a speaking line in the first episode when he arrived.
He didn't have elephants
before Cersei. Right. Yeah. And he is a named character in the books, and very disappointing that they didn't even let us see the Golden Company fight, but whatever. And then even more disappointing, I thought, was, well, I did think it was cool how Dany just flew out of the sky and took care of Euron's ships.
Right.
And I know we needed a greater death for Euron, but I really hated
it. I liked his death.
It was all right. I mean, an arrogant, stupid ass death for an arrogant, stupid ass character, I guess, makes sense. But yeah, that fight with he and Jamie, it just seemed ridiculous. And they were both way too hurt to keep fighting the way they did. And Jamie, to make it all the way as far as he did to Cersei, just was, I guess his.
That's true. Maybe you're on
fantasy adrenaline kicked in.
He didn't, you know. He didn't hit any vital organs or anything, so maybe he was okay. But no, I agree with you. I didn't mind Euron's death. I did mind that, like, a day ago, Euron was this great shot with those scorpions and was hitting that dragon 3 in a row, bing, bang, boom, and the dragon dies. And then now all of a sudden, you know, Danny's dragon can swoop and dive and swerve away and not get hit by it, and then just like destroyed all of the scorpions. I really liked I don't mean to keep complaining, but there were things that I actually did like. Like when Cersei was standing up by that window, just like hanging out, looking at what's going on. And Qyburn tells her she's like, don't worry, this just one good shot. And he's like, yo, those are gone. Like, everything's gone. She's like, that's okay. The company or whatever will kill him. She's like, they're fucked up too. You don't understand what's going on. I like that. She's like, but I'm safe in the Red Keep. They're like, no, they're on their way.
I think, you know, I've had a lot of time, and we'll get there, but a lot of time to think about Cersei's death. And, you know, really it was her own arrogance that did her in, because if she had just left when Qyburn said, she probably could have gotten away.
Yeah.
And the fact that she wanted to stand there and just act all smug and stupid, watching all of her people burn and seeing this dragon who could have flown straight at her about 100 times, but for some reason never did. Yeah. I think her arrogance is what did her in. And that's kind of fitting, you know?
But it's boring. It's boring.
George R.R. Martin will write it better. I still have faith.
Yeah, it makes me want to, like, start reading the books. Oh, I guess I don't really, yeah. I don't want to
start Tim reading them. Tim is listening to them in audio format. So yeah. I recommend it.
Okay. I don't think I'll start from the beginning, but somewhere in.
Oh no, just start from the beginning.
Really?
They're so good. And right. I hear the audio versions are very well done. The guy who reads them, you know, does all the voices and.
I've heard some of it like on YouTube.
So, I think some of my favorite parts of this episode were definitely the Arya and Sandor goodbye moment. I loved all of the scenes of them walking into the city. You know, they're in the big crowd, moving through the city, pushing their way in. They get through the door before it closes. The big doors close. Arya and Sandor are in. Jaime doesn't make it in. He has to go another way. All of this movement through the city was really fun to watch. But Arya, you know, and Sandor, they're getting so close. And I love that final moment in the map room when Sandor turns right. and says, if you come with me, you'll die. You know, Cersei's already dead. This is over for you. And he actually takes her head in his hands and is kind of cradling her head. And for a moment, her face switches to real little girl face, like a father-daughter moment. And it was so sweet and beautiful. And I just loved that goodbye moment. And I loved when she snaps out of it. She snaps out of kill mode right then and there in that moment. And then thanks him for the very first time of everything he's done for her. She finally thanked him. And so I just thought that moment was just perfect.
Go home, girl. Fire will get her. Or one of the Dothraki. Or maybe that dragon will eat her. It doesn't matter. She's dead. And you'll be dead too if you don't get out of here.
I'm going to kill her.
You think you wanted revenge a long time? I've been after it all my life. It's all I care about. And look at me. Look at me! You want to be like me? You come with me. You die here.
Sandor. Thank you.
I feel like it was a long time since someone called him Sandor.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I feel like people call him the Hound, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very much.
I feel like when she said that, he was like, oh.
Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have seen him live. However, the game bowl was magnificent.
Yeah, that was
magnificent. Really- so that whole fight on the steps... firstly him walking up and the stare down between Sandor and Gregor and Qyburn saying, obey your queen, stand by your queen. And he makes quick death of Qyburn by smashing his head. I loved that kind of Frankenstein's monster getting revenge on Dr. Frankenstein moment.
Yeah, bam. Really,
it was just perfect. And Cersei's little creeps off, you know, like, okay, I can see I'm three's a crowd. I'll just peace out here. That was beautiful, beautiful. And their fight was great, magnificent, and ends in fire, you know, ends
in their fall. I loved his laughing. I loved that he laughed during parts of it because he's like, why won't you die? I like that because it felt like he was with us, the audience, like, shit. You can't kill this guy.
Yeah. It was crazy, crazy good. Everything very fan servicey, but we wanted it. We got it. Very well done. So RIP, let's see. So our death poll, we're up to Euron. We've lost Euron, Harry Strickland, if you want to count him, Qyburn, who, and now also, and the Mountain, of course, too. And Sandor, and now, and Varys. And now we also see the death of Cersei and Jaime.
Yep. I was a little bit mad during that scene because I felt bad for Cersei.
I know.
And I didn't like that. I didn't want
that actress is so damn good. That's why. Her face when she sees Jaime, it's all crumbling around her and she looks up and sees Jaime and her face just turns into this like, I can't believe you're here. You came for me. And they actually think for a moment, again, arrogance, that they're actually going to make it out. And they get all the way down to Maegar's Holdfast, which is that area below where the dragon heads are, the skulls. And their way out, of course, is blocked. And
when she starts panicking. That's when I felt bad.
I know. I did
too. I was like, God damn it. Why am I feeling sad for you?
I want to babysit. Don't let me die, Jake. Please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. I don't want to die.
Just look at me. Look at me.
I don't like this. Don't like this. Don't like this.
Look me in the eye. Don't look away. Don't look. Look at me. Just look at me. Nothing else matters.
Definitely her pregnancy was a sympathetic factor. And she kept saying, I don't want our baby to die. What was interesting, it was a spin on the Valonqar prophecy and the fact that Jamie's hands were wrapped around her pale neck and she was choking to death and gasping for air because the building was caving in around her. She did suffocate to death. I love, you know, it was a nice twist.
Could have died from blunt force trauma. We're not sure.
It was a very well done scene. It did not give us this bloodlust revenge for Cersei that we've all wanted. We know she deserved, but in the end, she still died afraid. She still died, you know.
I guess. I feel like it would have been better if she had had a more interesting death. Just like, you know, when she who are those like ninja girls with the other gal who was like kissing them and then
the sand snakes.
Yes, the sand snakes. Like that death was cool for them. You know what I mean? Like right. Cersei gave them a cool death. And it would have been nice to have like a cooler death, like a more creative death for her. I didn't need to see like blood.
Right.
Just something. You know,
she had a creative death for Septa Unella Mordain. I don't remember which one, but the one that, you know, she left for the mountain to torture.
Yeah.
I agree. She's done some very creative, torturous death scenes and deserved her comeuppance. But really, in the end, what better way than for her to die scared and afraid? Except for it does suck that she got to die with the person she loved the most and who loved her the most. But anyway, R.I.P. Jaime and I guess Cersei.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about Daenerys already, but I did like the nice touch when Daenerys was burning the city. We did see some of the remaining wildfire caches also explode. That was that mix of that green fire in there. That was a nice touch. Of course, I just can't speak enough about how exciting, edge of my seat it was to behold. You got to really see these blurred lines between bad and good. You know, the Lannister army had thrown down their swords and surrendered, but as soon as Daenerys started burning, Grey Worm and even the Unsullied, the Dothraki, and even the Northern men all started fighting again. Jon couldn't stop them. It just all seemed crazy that they weren't turning and running and getting the hell out of there, because you got to believe Daenerys was burning some of her own people too.
That's what I said too. I was like, how is she discerning between her friends and her enemies?
Yeah. So it just was chaos, and the show did a great job of showing that chaos through Jon's eyes, through Arya's eyes.
Yeah.
All really well done. And Arya and that white horse that she gets on at the end, obviously she doesn't go far because we see in the next episode she's still there.
I was like, wait, I thought she left.
So that was some weird symbology. I loved everybody saying, oh, maybe that's the pale horse of death. She's riding off. She's really dead. You heard all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Only thing I thought was that the horse that Harry Strickland is on at the beginning before the Golden Company are taken down is this stark white horse, a very prominently white horse that he's on. So my only thought at the end, it was, oh, that must be Harry Strickland's horse that she's getting on.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
But it all meant nothing. So anyway, we move on.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about episode 5?
They just put emphasis on things that make us pay attention and then nothing happens. And that's... That jars you, you know, as a viewer.
I will say the books do that a little bit too.
Really?
You've got some red herring kind of storylines going, but it's meant to be a diversion, you know, or a tactic to keep you from seeing the real path. It's, you know, it's a lot of zigzags, not a linear story, but, So I can appreciate the show's attempt to do it.
Okay. But,
you know. Anyway. All right. So here we go. Oh, my God. Season 8, episode 6, entitled The Iron Throne. Good title for it. Good title for both of them. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess we didn't even talk about The Bells Rang, and the last one was called The Bells because, obviously, the focus was on the bells, the surrender with the bells.
The bell!
Anyway, The Iron Throne, written and directed by Benioff and Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
Quick side note, before it got started, did you see that Westworld trailer?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God. Do you watch Westworld?
I do.
Do you remember how season 2... I won't give any Westworld spoilers.
I forget, kind of, but...
Okay, well, I definitely cannot spoil Westworld, but season 2 ended with expansion of the world, let's say. Expanded beyond the park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They getting out into the human world.
Right.
So what they're showing in Westworld season 3 is what that looks like in our world now.
Cool.
And star of the show, Aaron Paul, aka Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad.
Ooh, oh, really?
Looks so good. So good.
Wow. Are you a robot, bitch?
All right. So, episode opens, death and destruction are everywhere.
Lots of John kids burnt.
Davos, yeah, John Davos, Tyrion, just walking through it, shocked, just still can't believe it. They come across Grey Worm and some Unsullied are executing some Lannister men. John confronts Grey Worm. That was a very tense moment. I really appreciated that. I really thought, oh my gosh, John's going to kill Grey Worm. Grey Worm's going to kill John. Something's going to happen here. I'm glad it didn't. But it was still a good, tense moment. We also get a very long, drawn-out scene of Tyrion finding Jaime and Cersei in the pile of bricks.
And crying.
Crying over them.
Crying like a little bitch. Mm. Sorry, I was still Jesse Pinkman.
So, you're under rocks, bitch.
I have appreciated Peter Dinklage in this whole entire series. One of the best, finest actors of this show.
I liked what he said too. There was an interview when he first read the script and he, you know, found out like there was this world and it was dragons and he's a little person. He was like, oh boy, here we go. What is this garbage? You know, but he said, oh, they're actually treating me like an actor in this show. Like, oh, I'm interested in this. And I always think about that when I'm watching him, like, oh man, he's getting to do some real things. He's not just like, I'm a little person on this show.
Yeah. You know? And he's been the lead, the first named actor
in
credits for, I would think, the past 3 seasons at least. Maybe
I noticed longer. That too. Why is that?
He's the star of the show. He's won an Emmy. I know he's won 1, maybe 2 Emmys for the show. I don't know, has anybody else?
Got a good publicist. He's good at a manager.
But that crying scene really did choke me up. He really played it well. We really could see Tyrion's just how sad and devastated he really was, and you know, mostly for Jaime.
Yeah.
So then Dany gives this great speech at the steps of the Red Keep to the Unsullied and to the Dothraki. I do think it was a neat shot as she rode in on Drogon and steps off of him and is walking up. It's perfectly framed with the dragon wings silhouetting her. That was a great shot.
That was
neat. And I also really appreciated that, if you notice, she spoke Dothraki at first and then transitioned and started speaking Valyrian when she addressed the Unsullied. Again, I don't know how there are people who actually have learned these languages and understand them, these made up fake languages. It's pretty incredible. Tyrion walks up to her and casts his hand pin away, hand of the queen pin, throws it down.
He lets her know that he is not happy with her decision.
He's very sarcastic with her, right, or facetious with her. She says, you set your brother free, or you freed your brother. He said, right, yeah, I freed my brother, and you slaughtered millions.
Yeah.
And then takes his, which I love. He's fed up, takes his pin off, throws it down. Again, I think Daenerys at this real state in a real story would have just burned him. But instead she, you know, says, you know, take him away and has him thrown into a pretty nice like prison.
At least that kind of made a little bit of sense because he's someone that's been with her for a long time. But you're right. I mean, it didn't take long with Varys, you know, for her to go after him.
Yeah.
So
we do see, yes, Arya didn't make it far on Harry Strickland's white horse.
She's like, JK, I'm
behind Jon. I do love her sneak up behind Jon again. And he's just, again, like, how are you even here? He's shocked. So they speak.
And also, you know, my husband Travis mentioned, mm-hmm. like, we had just seen Grey Worm down in the city, you know, cutting people's throats. And then John is like, I got to go talk to the queen about this. And John is walking up to meet the queen. But then there's Grey Worm at the top of the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
How did he get there? So Travis was like, I guess John took the long way around.
He ran.
Yeah. He was like, I got to go.
And then we also see John visit Tyrion. I really, really enjoyed that scene a lot between the two of them. Arya and Tyrion, of course, in different conversations with Jon, but they both infer Jon, they let Jon know what he needs to do. Which is, you know, because he's the only one that can get to Dany. Tyrion, this conversation between Tyrion and Jon, I did take a couple of notes.
Yeah.
Tyrion does, I like it, opens up with Tyrion asking Jon if there's life after death. You know, mm-hmm. he says, you're the one who would know.
Right.
And Jon at first, as they're talking about Daenerys, Jon weakly tries to defend Daenerys's actions, you know, saying, you know, what choice did she have? A very weak argument there.
But at least that makes sense, right? You're like, okay, he's saying all the reasons why she would defend her actions.
Right. Right. Still trying to be loyal to his queen.
Yeah.
And then I loved that Tyrion admits that he loves her too. This really explains that weird look that he was giving them during the boat sex last season.
I know you love her. I love her too. Not as successfully as you. But I believed in her with all my heart. Love is more powerful than reason. We all know that. Look at my brother. Love is the death of duty. You just came up with that. Maester Aemon said it a long time ago. Sometimes duty is the death of love. You are the shield that guards the realms of men. You've always tried to do the right thing, no matter the cost. You've tried to protect people. Who is the greatest threat to the people now? It's a terrible thing I'm asking. It's also the right thing. Do you think I'm the last man she'll execute? Who is more dangerous than the rightful heir to the Iron Throne? That's her decision. She is the queen. Sorry it came to this.
your sisters. Do you see them bending the knee? My sisters will be loyal to the throne.
Why do you think Sansa told me the truth about you? Because she doesn't want Dany to be queen.
She doesn't get to choose.
No. But you do. And you have to choose now.
I like his line where he says, I love her too, not as successfully as you have loved her. So, but he kind of implies it's the same kind of love. Mm. And then John says, love is the death of duty. And Tyrion is shocked that John came up with such wise words, which, of course, John admits, no, those were Master Aemon's words. The Maester Aemon, who was, of course, that old man from the Night's Watch, who was also a Targaryen, incidentally. No one ever mentions that anymore.
That was his, like, great-uncle or something?
Right. Yep. Yeah. And Tyrion's response then, taking those same words and saying, sometimes duty is the death of love, that was beautiful writing. John finally says, I'm sorry, I can't help you, and is about to leave. And then Tyrion says, well, what about your sisters? You know, like, he really plays his final card there, you know, getting John to realize that Daenerys will kill him, meaning John, then he'll kill his sisters, yeah. You know, because they won't bend the knee to her. So then he says to John, you must choose, and you must choose now. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was sitting there going, oh my God, it's going to happen. I knew at this point John was going to kill Daenerys. So we see John approach the throne room. Very cool scene of Drogon rising from the ashes. I loved that.
Yeah, that was neat.
At first I was like, wait, there's snow? And then I go, oh, duh, it's ashes.
We were trying to figure out, like, we thought it was ashes at first, but then it looked so snowy.
Yeah, it was ashes. It's ashes. But yeah.
But then Daenerys is walking through the throne room, and she's looking at that throne. She's like, I'm going to fucking sit on that. And then everybody who was betting on her to win, they were like, sit on that! I just pictured, like, a bunch of people at a bar watching it who had bet that Daenerys was going to be the one sitting on the throne, freaking out. And then there's Jon in the background. I was like, yeah. Money.
It was beautiful, haunting music, her walk to the throne. That should have been slow. It was slow. It was very much a climactic moment for her journey. I thought it was gorgeous. And
it was beautiful. Just like her vision.
Yeah, it was.
And I said after, because, okay, in her vision, right, when she was in that House of Many Faces or whatever with the, wait, is that the right place? House of the Undying with the she was having those visions through all those doors. Mm-hmm. And she was picturing, yeah, she was in that throne room and it was all destroyed and it was looked all snowy, you know, it was all open and broken. And then the next scene, the next vision she had was her with Drogo and her baby. So it's like, she did. She gonna die. Yo in danger, girl.
She needs to learn to read visions better.
Yeah, well, she knows the, like, hello, these were the visions. So, yeah. So I knew that I had a strong suspicion that she was a goner.
So John walks in and she, of course, tries to, you know, make this little small talk with him about how when she was a girl, she tells these little story about, you know, about couldn't count to 20 and couldn't envision how many swords could be melted to make this throne. Finally, John grows a set and actually yells at her. Mm-hmm. About, have you been down there? Have you seen the death and destruction? Children dead in the streets. She's just, you know, blows it off, couldn't be helped. And then he says, you know, then he tries to plead for her to forgive Tyrion. And she says that she, small mercies, she can't even show small mercies in these scenarios or something like that.
I kind of did understand what she was saying here.
Sure. But... And I think John was trying to see her side of it too, because I don't think he was fully convinced, but the line that got him, because you saw it in his face, is because she kept saying, help me, we'll help people, we stand for what's good and what's right. And he says, what about what, other people who think they know what's good? And she says, they don't get to choose. And that's when his face, that's when he knew. She's off her rocker saying something so crazy. He says, you are my queen now and always, and stabs her. And I like that they didn't draw out the death. She just slumps down dead.
When I was a girl, my brother told me it was made with 1,000 swords from Aegon's fallen enemies. What do 1,000 swords look like in the mind of a little girl who can't count to 20? I imagined a mountain of swords too high to climb. So many fallen enemies, you could only see the soles of Aegon's feet.
I saw them executing Lannister prisoners in the street. They said they were acting on your orders.
It was necessary.
Necessary? Have you been down there? Have you seen children, little children, burned?
I tried to make peace with Cersei. She used their innocence as a weapon against me. She thought it would cripple me.
And Tyrion?
He conspired behind my back with my enemies. How have you treated people who've done the same to you, even when it broke your heart?
Forgive him.
I can't.
You can. You can forgive all of them, make them see they made a mistake. Make them understand. Please, Danny.
We can't hide behind small mercies. The world we need won't be built by men loyal to the world we have.
The world we need is a world of mercy. It has to be.
And it will be. Not easy to see something that's never been before. A good world.
How'd you know? How'd you know it'll be good?
Because I know what is good. And so do you.
I don't.
You do. You do. You've always known.
What about everyone else? The people who think they know what's good.
They don't get to choose. Be with me. Build the new world with me. This is our reason. It has been from the beginning, since you were a little boy with a bastard's name. And I was a little girl who couldn't count to 20. We do it together. We break the wheel together.
You are my queen. Now and always.
Drogon swoops in. It really had me in the feels when he was trying to nudge her awake. That was
like Fang, like in White Fang, when that little dog is Lion King, all of those things.
And I also thought, okay, this show, bittersweet. They've promised us this bittersweet ending. I really thought Drogon would turn and just burn Jon right then and there.
And then we were saying, like, will he burn him, and then we'll get to see that Jon's fireproof?
Anything. Yeah. But also, I think that they don't think that the dragon could intuit that much, that clearly, that it was Jon that killed her. You know,
until
she was dead, he was devastated. He somehow knew the throne was what symbolically caused Dany's death, so he took his time to burn that fucking throne down.
That was fun.
So,
do people get money? Because I feel like the bet was so-and-so sits on the throne. Who's sitting on the throne at the end? And it's no one.
I'm not a gambler. I won't even put a nickel in a slot machine. So I have no idea how that works. But the Bran thing, I will say, the Bran thing was leaked. And that's how the Vegas odds knew to have
it. How was it leaked?
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, because how would they know Bran?
I don't know.
In Bran.
So, Drogon, of course, picks her up and flies off. And that was also perfect. But then, so we get a time jump. I call this kind of part two or the coda of the show because it's the wrap up, right?
Yeah.
I really felt like then and there, John should have gotten the hell out of Dodge. I mean, why stick around and wait to be imprisoned? And anyway, but somehow we're to understand Tyrion stayed in prison this whole time. Jon was also imprisoned.
Well, it took a while for Sansa and company and everybody to come into town.
Right, but with Jon and Tyrion both in prison, are we supposed to suspect that it was Grey Worm who was reaching out to all these lords and ladies to try to get them to gather in a council? I mean, it's ridiculous. Somebody with some sense had...
Somebody was like, hey, where's Jon?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Is anyone home? So, I mean, maybe... They had to. That's a good point.
It's
like everyone was just like killed in King's Landing, so there's no structure anymore. Yeah. So who
sent for them to say these two men are in prison? We need y'all to pick a new king and get on with it because we can't make a decision here. We're from Essos.
We don't know how this works.
So, but. Anyway, so we're to believe it's been several weeks. I think they even make a mention about it's been a few weeks. And we see the council in the Dragon Pit, the Council of the Lords have gathered, and I actually paused and wrote down from left to right because I wanted to figure out who they all are. So if you want to know how they were sitting from left to right, here they are. Starting from the very furthest left, we have Samwell Tarly. Then we have an old man who I don't know. Then we have Edmure Tully, brother of Catelyn Stark, whom I was bitching about. Where the hell's he been? So here he is.
He's been like married.
Yes.
In a dungeon or something.
In the phrase dungeons. And for all we knew, never free, but he was looking pretty spiffy there.
Yeah, he was fine.
Then we have Arya, then Bran, then Sansa, then Brienne, then Davos, then Gendry. Then I have a man with a beard. He was kind of a younger man whom we don't know. And then we had another man with a short gray beard, kind of maybe middle-aged, that we don't know. Then we have Yara. Then we have the new Dorne prince. We could tell by what he was wearing that he was from Dorne.
Yeah.
Sweet Robin Aaron.
Hot.
I don't know about that, but definitely better
Disney.
Than...
He looked like a Disney prince. It's hot.
Sitting next to Sweet
Robin. I
think
he's the new Aladdin.
Sitting next to him was Lord Royce, also from the Vale.
Yeah.
Then there was a fat old man who could have been maybe Lord Glover.
Mm.
That was at the very end. And
they all look familiar.
So of those four, the one of the three older men, too, I believe, also could have been Howland Reed. But they just never bothered naming them. But anyway, it was interesting to see them all there. It definitely helped... Close the loop for me for Edmure Tully, so I appreciated that. Liked seeing Yara and Sweet Robin again, of course, and this Dornish prince that we knew they had cast. I had heard that they cast that guy, so I was curious how they were going to do it. So they bring out Tyrion and kind of have words over, you know, we start to see Yara, you know, saying she wants Jon Snow's head, she's loyal to Daenerys. Arya says, threaten my brother again. I'll slit your throat. Davos finally stands up, puts a stop to it, says Jon Snow's fate must be decided by the new king or queen. Then it starts really getting hilarious. I always love the humor they inject into this show. So I loved Edmure Tully standing up and trying to start some sort of a pitch. And Sansa saying, uncle, please sit, was probably the best line of the whole show.
My lords and ladies, I suppose this is the most important moment of our lives. What we decide today will reverberate through the annals of history. I stand before you as one of the senior lords in the country, a veteran of two wars, and I like to think my experience has led to some small skill in statecraft and understanding.
Please sit.
Sam also stands up and suggests, you know, a stab at democracy by letting the people vote, and they all have a great laugh at that, which was hilarious too. Then Tyrion brings forth all the cases on why it should be Bran, on all of his accomplishments.
He started talking about like stories. I was like, oh no!
But I think what Tyrion was demonstrating was Bran's tenacity and his wisdom and his supernatural ability that would give him this sight or this vision to be a good leader. Tyrion really made a good argument.
The context of like decision making. Right.
Fell out of a window and survived. Crippled yet went beyond the wall, you know, survived beyond the wall against all odds, was told he'd never walk again, but he could fly, survived the long night. On and on it goes. They all agree except for Sansa,
yeah,
who even her own brother, she won't bend the knee. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. So if Sansa's going to secede, why don't the Iron Islands secede? Why don't they all just be like, okay, we'll all just be our own independent thing. We don't need a king. It's dumb. But for whatever reason, only the North is allowed to secede. And, yeah.
I guess it's been that way for thousands of years, she said, right? So,
yes.
I guess that's true.
The North wasn't really under the control of the Seven Kingdoms until Robert's rebellion and until Robert was on the throne because Robert and Ned's friendship. And so I guess that makes sense. But nonetheless, you know, they'll still work well together. You know, it'll be like Canada and the United States. It'll be
fine. Sure.
Yeah. So, all hail Bran the Broken.
But this is where you're right. Kingdoms. This is where you're right. Where nobody talks about John.
Yeah.
Hello.
All hail Bran the Broken, first of his name, King of the Andals and the First Men, Lord of the Six Kingdoms, and Protector of the Realm.
All hail Bran the Broken.
Then, okay, so here's what I hate. So Tyrion I do love that he names Tyrion his hand.
Uh-huh.
Grey Worm hates it and says, no, that's not right. We need, you know, he deserves better punishment. And Bran, the wise argument, Bran gives some good Branness. He, you know, some good argument. He says he doesn't want it. He's going to have to work hard and do the thing, you know, fix the things that he has fucked up. So, right. So he is being punished in that regard. And so Grey Worm seems to accept that. Grey Worm's pretty reasonable guy, you know, for having really just learned the common tongue not too long ago. but here's what I hate. Okay. So they decide, well, just to satisfy the Unsullied, that John has to be banished to the wall and can never father any children and all these things, has to go back to his Night's Watch oath. But then all the Unsullied get on ships and leave for Noth. So how in the hell are they going to know if John really went away? Why couldn't they be like, hey, the Unsullied left. Hey, guess what, John? The Unsullied don't give a crap if we enact justice on you or not. You can do what you want.
Why did they go to Noth? Because Missandei was there? I didn't think all the Unsullied were going. I thought it was just
He says all of the men are on the ship. The Unsullied didn't feel like they belonged there.
Yeah.
That was not their homeland. I get it. Fine. Go back. Go live peaceful lives. You deserve it. All for it. But why feel like you've got to have some justice on Jon Snow if you're not even going to stick around and make sure it gets carried out? That's dumb. Why not be like, I don't care what you do with Jon Snow. We're leaving.
I mean, all right. So he does care. So there's that. But, and I guess maybe Yara would care. But, yeah.
Maybe.
It was just a way so that we could see this family of leaders.
Yeah,
right.
And that's fine. John probably would have gone back north anyway. So it really wasn't a punishment to him. But
yeah,
to tell him,
go hang out with them. What's his name? Tormund.
To tell him he can't have a wife or father any children. Okay, we don't even need the Night's Watch in the same way that we needed them before.
Yeah.
So why not change the rules of the Night's Watch? You're changing the rules of how you're going to elect a king. Let the Night's Watch have families.
It's kind of changed the rules because in the end, he just like rode off to the north anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter.
He can do what he wants, I'm sure. Yeah. I do like that they also say rulers will not be born. They will be chosen. And right before I guess I need to back it up a little bit, because Tyrion goes to Bran and says, what do you think about this? You know, will you be our king? And I love Bran's response. Why do you think I came all this way? Yeah. It was really a good response. So Bran knew it was like, we knew Bran knew it was coming. But that also shows that Bran's not going to use that power to his own advantage.
Mm.
He waited for the people to make that decision and didn't try to influence it, which also would make him a great leader.
Sure.
So anyway, we get some end scenes here. John says goodbye to his brother and or his cousins, his brother and sisters. He kneels before Bran and says, Your Grace, I'm sorry I couldn't protect you. Bran tells him, you were exactly where you were supposed to be. We see Sansa become queen in the north, be named queen in the north. We see Arya sail off for her adventures beyond Westeros. That was a callback to season 6 when, you know, Jon says, where will you go? And she said, what's west of Westeros? And he said, no one knows. And she goes, the maps all end there. I'd like to see, you know, what's out there. That she had that conversation with Lady Crane, the actress, in Bravos.
Oh yeah, that's right.
When the actress was trying to get her to come with her to be part of their acting troupe, and she said no. And that's when they had that same conversation. Then anything else to say about these goodbye scenes? Any other thoughts you have?
No, it just kept reminding me of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, my favorite, I think, scene of the whole show was Brienne writing in the Book of the Nights.
Yeah. Updating, Jamie's wiki page.
Correct. That was also a callback, earlier in the episode, when Jaime returned after having his hand chopped off, he finally returns to King Landing.
Right.
Joffrey is being such an ass to him and is tormenting him. And they're standing there in that room with that book. And Joffrey's going through, oh, Sir Arthur Dayne. He's flipping through all these great knights, Sir Barristan Selmy. Same pages that we saw Brienne flip through. And he gets to Jaime's page and he says, not much written about you, uncle. Real snarkily. So I love that Jaime put in, or that Brienne was putting in all of Jaime's accomplishments. And so I took screenshots and I will read them. What we were able to read on the screen. There was a line written in there that where it had left off before Brienne starts. The final line was, after the murder of King Joffrey the First by Tyrion Lannister, served under King Tommen the First. I was really upset that she didn't edit that and cross off Tyrion Lannister and change that to Olenna Tyrell, because I think that's probably
maybe she doesn't know.
Well, we know it wasn't Tyrion.
Right, but they don't. Maybe she doesn't know that.
So she writes, captured in the field at the Whispering Wood, set free by Lady Catelyn Stark in return for an oath to find and return her two daughters. You can see she's starting to write lost hand. So it, of course, it's probably going to say lost hand in the process. Then the next passage we see is took River Run from the Tully rebels without loss of life, lured the Unsullied into attacking Casterly Rock, sacrificing his childhood home in service to a greater strategy. Outwitted the Targaryen forces to seize Highgarden, fought at the Battle of the Gold Road bravely, narrowly escaping death by dragonfire, pledged himself to the forces of men and rode north to join them at Winterfell. And then finally, faced an army of the dead and defended the castle against impossible odds until the defeat of the Night King, escaped imprisonment and rode south in an attempt to save the capital from destruction, died protecting his queen.
Nice.
Very nice. Very nice.
She did a good job.
Beautiful moment there. Then we see also very funny, the small council meeting, Bran's small council meeting.
I loved it.
Tyrion is straightening the chairs, much like Tywin used to do before the start of small council meetings.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
So
he was being very fussy with the chairs.
Yeah.
So he comes in, they all kind of have their, you know, I love the conversation between Davos and Braun. You know, Davos says, well, when Master of Lofty Titles over there gives me some coin, you know, and
I can help rebuild the ships and the docks.
Yeah. And he says something wrong and Davos corrects him and Braun says, oh, so now you're master of grammar too. It was very funny. And Brienne says, I think we can all agree the ships take precedence over brothels. And Tyrion, the best callback of the whole series, bravo, Benioff and Weiss. Tyrion says, I once brought a jackass and a honeycomb into a brothel. That joke he has started two other times in the show and never finished it. Always been interrupted.
Right.
So that is like the, we'll never know that it's a joke, but it's a punchline we'll never know. So I loved it.
Yeah. I just liked that it turned into just like regular like business now.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess before like chatting.
I guess before all that happened, we did see Braun, or excuse me, Bran get rolled in. And by the way, it is mentioned, the new small council is Tyrion, Davos is master of ships, Braun, who is master of coin, and also Lord of Highgarden. So yeah, they kept that promise. We see Grand Maester Sam. We see Brienne, who is clearly head of the Kingsguard, and then she also addresses Sir Podrick, and we see he is in knight's garb as well.
Yep, he's so happy to be there.
There to wheel Bran around, so that's good. Sam presents A Song of Ice and Fire, the book of the history of events since Robert's Rebellion, and it's very hilariously revealed that Tyrion's not mentioned in it.
Why, though?
That was just to be a comic relief moment. I mean, that's just
funny. But why? Okay, but why wasn't he mentioned? Like, why wouldn't they mention him?
Who knows? I guess it's like them saying his role wasn't significant enough.
I mean, he killed.
Of course. But it was funny. But yeah, not really good in the context of the show, but of what the book was representing. But still, it was funny. Bran comes in. They do discuss, you know, the last Drogon sighting, and Bran does mention, like, perhaps I can find him, meaning, you know, of course he's going to try his warging. And I like how he says, do carry on with the rest, and they all give their long may he reign, and Tyrion says, that will improve.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely shows a very peaceful, you know, a peaceful rule, so that's good.
Like business as usual.
Right. And so finally, the end montage, we do see Jon, Arya, and Sansa all really getting what they really wanted in the end. Sansa wanted to be queen when she was a little girl and back in season one. Now she's queen. Arya wanted to sail off on great adventures. She's doing it. Jon wanted just a peaceful life, I'm sure.
And I guess, so, yeah.
His reunion with Ghost was good. His reunion with Tormund was underwhelming, but it was good that he had a friend there that we got to see them again. So the end scene was Jon just going beyond the wall, I guess just out for a daily stroll. Whatever.
I thought they were taking the wildlings like back to the north, like where they were going to go live.
I just don't understand. Why would anybody want to live in like zero below freezing their asses off when just like a couple, 100 miles, there's all this free land you can just have that's been given to them and they don't have to live in such cold conditions.
But I guess they don't want to be under any kind of king or queen or whatever.
I guess it's their choice. They're definitely
homeland.
Right. You definitely see a peaceful realm and the chance that perhaps Jon will be the ruler in that area. They're all going to follow him, of course, and look up to him. So, end scene, my final thoughts, we've kind of already talked about it along the way, but the whole Jon being, a Targaryen and being the rightful heir to the throne and all of that secrecy about his birthright and the fact that it went nowhere really frustrated me. That wasn't even brought up. And in tangent, all those ravens Varys sent, presumably all those people sitting there in that council all got one.
Right.
So the fact that none of them said, wait, I got a raven from Lord Varys that said, Jon is this true Targaryen. And
yeah, what's that about? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, like let's...
Look, we can still decide on Bran, but we should at least talk about this other candidate.
Yeah. And even if he doesn't want to be king, isn't he still an important bloodline that we need to keep around?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then when they're all saying their goodbyes, they all act like they're never going to see each other again. But we have seen clearly in the past two seasons that people can zip around this world with no problem. We get wherever they want to go with absolutely no problem.
Yeah, and John is not far. If he's at the wall or even like a little north of the wall, it doesn't take that far long to get to
Winterfell.
Winterfell, yeah.
He could go home for Christmas and Thanksgiving and see Sansa at the very least. And Arya can too. And Bran, you know, this is ridiculous that they're all acting like it's goodbye forever. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And again, why can't John father any children? That's fucking stupid. If they're going to change the Night's Watch set, you know, that whole setup and those whole vows ought to be reconfigured so that they're not so limited.
Right. You
know, and that it's not just criminals.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, it's for criminals and things. Because, I mean, those things, those people will still exist. But, yeah, it was just underwhelming.
We needed seven more episodes.
I think so. And it would have just, I would have taken, I don't know. I guess it's because of money, right? It has to be because of money. Like they were spending a lot of money on these episodes.
So you know Benioff and Weiss are doing the next Star Wars movies.
Right.
I think
they needed to end their contract with HBO.
I think they were bored of the show, which is dumbfounding to us as the viewer, but I think they were bored of doing it. I think they were disgruntled a little bit because, or maybe a lot, because when they signed on to do the show, they signed on to do an adaptation. And then it turned into they were having to do original content. So that was not what they wanted to do. They wanted to adapt Martin's books.
Right, maybe.
Yeah. Not figure out how they were going to end. So I think they got up to a point, because I think HBO would have thrown as much money and as much time and as much everything as they wanted at them. I think they just got to a point where they were like, we're done, we're ready to wrap it up before we get any more jaded and bitter about it.
I guess so.
This was a labor of love that we wanted to set out and do. We've done it. But toward the end, they were not as passionate about the project, say, as it was when they started out.
Wow. Well, it's a shame. Except who cares, I guess, there was a lot of anticipation, you know, that could hurt any series finale. But Game of Thrones has given us a lot of great episodes and entertainment. So, I mean, it's nothing to really be mad about or to actually be upset about. It means nothing in anyone's daily life. So if you ever see, if you see stuff on Twitter or online, people being upset, I mean, I feel like those are the same people that, you know, talk about things that are happening in the world and act like it's, you know, really affecting their lives. Obviously, there are some things that are really affecting women's lives and people's lives that are happening right now. I understand that. But some things like, I don't know, things that are happening on TV or someone saying something that someone else disagrees with, it's that same sort of vitriol that you see online. And it's just not reality.
You know? Agree. I think what's sad is that an era of television has come to an end. This is quite possibly the last show ever where people will be talking about it week to week. People will have so much anticipation, you know, over the next episode.
Why do you think it'll be the last show ever?
Because shows are going to the streaming format. People are watching shows at all different intervals now. People aren't, you know, watching shows when they're live anymore. Some are waiting for them to hit Netflix or Hulu. So there's just, but Game of Thrones, everybody watched it live. There was so much conversation and anticipation around it. You could talk about it and sit with an episode from one week to the next and have all this great conversation around it. People are going to be watching things on their own pace and on their own timing going forward as the future of television is all streaming. So, you know, I'll talk about a show that maybe you saw last year already or, you know, vice versa. So it just is not going to line up with the same great anticipation where everybody's on the same playing field.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. But maybe that whole thing will just change, you know, and it'll be people who are in it right now will be listening to what you're talking about right now. Like, if, for example, like the podcasting. or it'll be like people who have already seen it but would love to live through it again, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. It's definitely a show that I will revisit many, many times over the span of my life. And I'm very excited about the prequel series they're going to be doing. Already mentioned, I'm excited about Westworld. There's some other great shows coming out on HBO. I'm excited about that. They showed a trailer for His Dark Materials, which I thought looked really good.
Yeah.
Watchmen, can't wait for that. Very excited.
Pretty Little Liar or whatever.
Yeah, Pretty Little, Big Little Lies. Little season Lies. 2. Did you watch?
I knew that Pretty Little Lies was some horrible, like, Lifetime show, I think.
CW or something. Did you watch Big Little Lies season 1?
No. Mm-mm.
Dip in. It's very good.
Yeah.
It's better not knowing because it's a mystery that's not solved until the end. And then season one covers a book, and then season 2 goes beyond the book, takes it past the book intentionally. So I think it's going to be very good. Okay. I am watching, just to quickly go over a couple other shows for anybody who wants to tweet us at MikeTV1. I'm watching Fosse Verdon right now. Are you watching that?
I just started that today.
So good. Okay. You'll get caught up on your vacation, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward. I'm watching Killing Eve. Hopefully a lot of other, you know, it runs up against, it's been running the same time as Game of Thrones. So obviously it gets on the DVR. But coming up, what I'm looking forward to, Good Omens is dropping on Amazon within a couple of weeks. I will probably cover a little bit of that on Mike TV. The Handmaid's Tale season 3, also starting in a couple of weeks on Hulu. We'll probably talk about that. Legion season 3. I've got somebody, Rockdale Tiger, I'm coming for you. He and I are talking about covering Legion. I'd like to do an episode where we kind of recap season 1 and 2 before diving into 3. And then some other things that are in the distant future, near to distant future, are The Boys coming out on Amazon, and Preacher will be back on AMC in a couple of months. So those are some things looking forward to that Mike TV is going to cover for sure, some of my favorite shows, but nothing that is going to be as near and dear to me as Game of Thrones. So let's close out this episode. We will say a fond farewell to all we lost. Who are you Autumn, who are you most devastated that we lost? Who died that you really wish, just wish, if only this person was still alive?
Gosh, I can't think of anybody who died. Oh, well, I can't watch that scene where the red woman kills the daughter.
Oh, Shireen.
Shireen, I can't watch that.
No, I'm like, I can't either.
I'm out.
After I watched
I think about,
I swore I'd never watch it again, and I haven't. You're exactly right. That is one scene. And also Hodor. I really, the Hodor moment, although I have watched it many times, I cry every time. Ooh, and I heard something cool. What? You know, Hodor was hold the door.
Yeah.
Somebody said Beric was like a barricade, because he was the barricade during the long night that helped Arya and the Hound get away. Mm. Kind of barricaded the wall.
He did. That's fun.
So that was a cool, fun little analogy there. I would say, I would say Jaime or Theon.
Theon?
I would have liked, I think that Sansa deserved a happy ending. I feel like she, not that you have to be in a relationship.
All alone up there too. She's all alone up there in that north. All by herself.
Theon would have been a good partner for her, somebody that she definitely loved and cared about and who loved her back.
Oh, that little Stark brother that died in the Battle of the Bastards could have... That sucks that he died.
Rickon, would have liked to
see. Even though he's a pain in the ass, always running off while they were trying to walk places. God damn it, Rickon!
Or else, of course, I still somehow wish Jaime could have lived. Or Varys. Varys.
Varys, my queen. He was my true queen.
I know. He was the best queen.
Yeah.
All right. And then we will sign off here. Pour one out for Varys, everybody. Autumn, thank you so much. Give a couple plugs on where everybody can find you. I know everybody should know if they're listening to this, but and talk about Hoff and Pepper.
Yeah. So we love this hot sauce. It's called Hoff sauce because the owner of it is named Aaron Hoffman, and he makes this really, really great hot sauce. It's not too spicy. And I really just talk about it so much because I really do love it. And you can go to hoffandpepper.com and you can get 15% off with my code RadioLab15. You can also find me Monday through Friday from 9 to 12 at on the Von Hessler Doctrine on WSB. That's all turned into a podcast. So if you search for the Von Hessler Doctrine in iTunes or any other place where podcasts are found, you can look for me there. I'm also on Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews and Jeff Lieboff, which is a company with this show. And also, our own show with me and, my friend Greg Russ, who is also part of the Von Hessler Doctrine. It's a very incestuous thing we have going on. It's called One Topic, and you can also find that anywhere podcasts are found. You can find us online. You can find me everywhere on social media at Otto Pritz, P-R-I-T-T-S.
Perfect. You said something on last week. I haven't listened to this week's One Topic, but last week's. And I almost started to text you because I was like, oh my God, that's exactly like me. And now I can't remember what it is. It'll hit me at a weird time and I'll let you know.
Well, yeah, I love doing One Topic. It's like my little baby. I think about it a lot. So I hope that people like it. So
it's a lot of fun. Thanks. You guys are so honest in it. And I always think, gosh, they're so honest. Who would be so, who would just peel back the curtains so much and be so honest? Not many.
That's what I'm all about.
So kudos to you guys. Thanks. That's a brutally honest show.
Yeah. Sometimes maybe it's too much.
But. No, it's great. It's so funny. So funny. And I wanted to say about the Von Hessler Doctrine, just a little side note that I was so happy about. The on-demand, if you have the WSB app like I do, they have fixed the on-demand feature for the Von Hessler Doctrine. I was always so annoyed with that on-demand before because it would only be the first 2 hours of the show. And then it would cut off and start over. And I just thought, you know, they can't get it straight. They can't get all 3 hours in. So now not only is the on-demand button for Von Hessler Doctrine through that app all 3 hours, but it's also now commercial and news free.
Oh,
so you can listen to it through the WSB app if you're like my parents and don't know how to download a podcast.
Right.
You can get it straight through the app and listen to it like a podcast. So
well,
that
thank
was
you
fun.
For finding that out. That's awesome.
Fun little discovery there. Yeah. They finally got it. All right. Well, thank you very much. Mike TV will probably take a break for a week or two while we get Rockdale Tiger on board and get some notes together and do a rewatch of Legion. And we'll be back at you within the next couple of weeks with some coverage of Legion. So thank you very much, Autumn. Thank you, Radio Labyrinth. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.